Remember this Halloween, keep your kids safe. Here are some helpful tips. Go only to well-lit houses and remain on porches rather than entering the house. Travel in small groups and be accompanied by an adult. Know their phone number, carry coins for emergency telephone calls, or carry a cell phone. Have their names and addresses attached to their costumes. Bring treats home before eating them so parents can inspect them. Teach your kids to have fun and be safe. This public service announcement is brought to you by your friends at Pirate Cat Radio.
Right. Welcome, Pirate Cat listeners. This is another edition of Techno for Science. This is DJ Rooch, as always, kicking off the show with A Parrot Fractales Part 1 on his album Walls. Got a lot of good music for you in store today. My guests today are two grad students at UCSF, started their own radio called Carry the One Radio, 10-minute podcasts with neuroscientists from across the country. We'll be chatting with them about neuroscience and all sorts of interesting things. Shoot me a call, 415-341-1199. You can stop by the station, corner of 21st and Florida in the beautiful Mission District of San Francisco. I'll be here till 6. Hope you enjoy. All right, PyroCat listeners, this is DJ Rooch with Techno for Science. You're listening to Martin Buttrich with Song 6 on Crash Test right now. Before that was The Hundred in the Hands, Dresden Dresden, with the Various remix. I'm really digging everything Warp is putting out recently, and especially the stuff that Hundred in the Hands is doing. Brooklyn-based duo, I just saw them last week in San Francisco, put on an excellent show, highly recommend checking them out. Before that was Panther Du Prince with Behind the Stars on his latest album, Black Noise. In just a few minutes, I'm going to bring in Sama Ahmed and Brian Reynolds of Carry the One Radio. We'll chat about some neuroscience. Shoot me a call, 415-341-1199, or stop in the station at 21st and Florida. Let's get back to the music.
Thank you. From October 28th to November 3rd, the San Francisco Film Society presents French Cinema Now, bringing the most significant new work from one of the world's most renowned filmmaking countries. Opening night of French Cinema Now features Marc Ruffalo's film Copacabana, with a masterful performance by Isabelle Huppert. Likewise, Juliette Binoche's performance in Closing Night's Certified Copy garnered the Best Actress prize at Cannes. For French Cinema Now tickets and information, visit sffs.org. This public service announcement was brought to you by your friends at Pirate Cat Radio.
Construction.
Welcome back, Pirate Cat listeners. This is Techno for Science with DJ Rooch. You're listening to a classic, JFC, with Construction on Chrome Deluxe, Time Rider's alias. I would like to now introduce the guests for today, Sama Ahmed and Brian Siebold, grad students at UCSF. Did I get that right, Brian?
Yes, you did.
Brian and Sama, actually Sama started Carry the One Radio, which are 10-minute podcasts with neuroscientists. I will let Sama introduce himself and tell us about what you're doing with Carry the One.
Great. Thanks for having us on your show, Rooch. Really appreciate it. So I'm originally from Philadelphia. I studied at Penn, and I'm a graduate student in the neuroscience department at UCSF. And I've been here in San Francisco for about a year now, and a month into my program, I decided that there would need to be some sort of outreach program that I should get started with to get more people into science and to sort of diversify the playing field. And initially, it just started as a small project where I would interview a scientist for about 10 minutes on their research and a little bit about their background, and I started telling more and more people about this project, and they became very, very interested. And Brian, who's with us today, also became a partner on the program. And it's been a lot of fun doing it, I guess. And it's geared towards high school students and college, early college students, sort of to get them interested in science and hopefully pursue science as a career.
So what got you interested in neuroscience in high school and college, and what was the reasons to kind of give back in this way?
Right. So I was a product of a minority apprenticeship program, research program. So in high school, I started doing research in a lab sort of as part of this summer program, and I fell in love with research. I had no idea what research was initially, and through this program, I was able to learn how all of the stereotypes that I had and all the ideas I had about what scientists do on a daily basis is completely wrong. And it was, for one, I thought scientists were all very serious people, always wearing lab coats. And
They are.
Some of them are, but the majority of them are not. They look like normal people. And
absolutely.
Yeah. And the reason I wanted to give back was also to just have an easy way to connect the higher ups, the PIs, which is the principal investigators, the lab heads, with high school students. And the easiest way to do this, I thought, would be through media such as iTunes and Facebook, and to get them sort of straight from the horse's mouth, the research that what they're so interested about, you know, and what they're working on, what's the fire in their belly, as my previous PI, Paul Breslin, would say. And that's exactly what we're working towards.
So you guys started really soon after coming to UCSF. Kind of immediately you decided that you just want to know more about what people are doing and get that info to high school students.
Right. There's a lot of amazing research being done at UCSF and throughout the country. And I feel like a lot of people don't know about it. And especially high school and college students, they have no access to this. A lot of them have no access to speaking on a day-to-day basis with a scientist. And this seemed to be the easiest way to get this information out there. It's just use iTunes and Facebook. And I've actually got something that's really positive is I got a lot of emails from some high school students and many college students who started listening to the show, really happy with it and really amazed. And some of them actually wanted to start working in labs. So this is really, really had a positive impact on me. I didn't actually think anyone was listening, you know, but it seemed that it's working.
And good for you. No, that's fantastic. Yeah, no, that's the whole point of the show.
Right,
that's,
exactly. We're meeting our mission.
That's really great. So are you actually doing anything proactive about contacting high schools? And
yeah, this is actually one of the reasons that Brian wanted to hop on the project. He wanted to reach out specifically to high school principals and teachers. And he maybe could actually tell you a little bit more about himself.
Yeah, so in at least that aspect, it's really all about trying to find the people that can make things happen. So if there's anybody out there who is the head of a science department in a high school, please let us know, send us an email, and we'll get that connected. And because it's all about trying to make it approachable so that science isn't something that's just mysterious that other people do. It's about making it be like, oh, I can think about science and kind of do that in my daily life. And then so it's trying to find people who are able to recognize that and kind of carry that message on.
Good for you. So, Brian, what's your background? How did you get interested in science, and what made you want to join the Carry the One project?
So I had a rather different background from Samus. I grew up, actually, and my mother is a neuroscientist. And it probably kept me very exposed to it. And so I've had kind of that voice, which was always talking about neuroscience. And so it was always something that was there. However, for the very longest period of my life, I was very adamant about not doing that. And I didn't want to follow in that footstep at all. I didn't even want to do biology. But it's just kind of as time went on, more pieces fell into place. And I discovered that I really loved the ability to ask questions and then actually find the answer. And so it's been kind of a slow process of just kind of converting from not wanting to do science, but knowing what it was, to realizing that it's really what I enjoy doing. And so I just kind of want to bring that accessibility and that knowing that it's an option and that you can always go and do science. And there's a way to like answer the questions. There's a character in a book that I've read who his shoelaces break and he wants to know, why do shoelaces break? And he goes into a 10-page digression of finding out that somebody has actually done analysis to figure out shoelaces break for certain reasons. And it's that kind of mentality that I want people to be able to know that, you know, you can find the answers yourself, or if not, have faith that somebody is hopefully looking.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So what recent interviews for Carry the One? So maybe you could give me a general idea of like the kind of scientists that you are interested in. And is it just kind of based on your own interests, or is it kind of localized to UCSF? So, you know, what's the structure of the show and how do you go about finding guests?
Right. So the majority of the episodes so far have been from UCSF, simply because as graduate students, we don't have money or time to travel around the country finding professors to sit down with us. But we have had non-UCSF interviews. I just traveled to Okinawa, Japan, and I had an interview with the program director from Harvard, Davey von Vachter, who will be his episode will be coming up this week. We've also had people from University of Pennsylvania, and a few from Stanford. And the way we sort of capture these people is whenever they come to visit UCSF, or whenever I travel, or if Brian travels, we'll try to sit down with them for 10 minutes. And sooner or later, we'll be able to interview them over the phone or through Skype or GChat and through the internet and reach out to try to get as many different people as possible. So not necessarily neuroscientists. And Brian actually wants to do, we'll tell you a little bit more about his motivation for coming on and to the show and finding different kinds of researchers.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are both in the neuroscience department.
Yeah, this is right.
Yes, we are. But we're trying not to limit the things we present to just neuroscience. We want to kind of cover what science does in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so one angle that I'm particularly interested in is not representing just the academic side of science, but realizing that there are people all across the world and all across the country who do it as part of their daily lives for a business. And in their industrial types of sciences, they still do all these research things, and they do hypothesis testing and figure out what's the best way to do something. And just bringing in more people from different backgrounds and different walks of life who still use science, I think is a powerful tool to make you connect with it and realize that no matter what you do, science can be helpful in your life.
That's fantastic. So before I forget, what is the website and the radio called?
Right. So the website is www.carrytheoneradio.com. It's CARRYTHEONERADIO.com. And that's the name of the program also. It's Carry the One Radio. And something I want to mention also, my favorite part of the show is at the last 2-3 minutes, there's a biographical aspect of it where I ask the professor or the PI, can you tell me a little bit about why you got into science? And the stories they have I've ranged from, oh, I had a great biology teacher, to this is what I wanted to do all my life, to I've hated science, and now I'm a top-tier professor at Harvard or something, you know. So I really urge people to listen to these parts, because you can start really from anywhere.
Yeah.
And then become a famous Nobel laureate, you know, without it being in the, you don't have to have it as an energy or the spark from a very early on. It can come later and can still be phenomenal.
we're all scientists. If science is curiosity, then you know you can formalize that at any age, is my opinion.
Absolutely, you know,
you can be a scientist, if that's what you call it, when you're 80.
Yeah.
If all you do is ask questions and figure out the physical answer to them.
I agree with that.
So what have been some of your favorite topics and guests so far?
Right, so we've had a pretty interesting talk from Michael Shadlin, who's a HHMI professor, the Howard Hughes professor from University of Washington. And he's on the show talking about timing and how your brain sort of codes for timing. Like if I say 1, 2, 3, like how does your brain anticipate this timing? And he does this work in monkeys. It's very cool work. And something that I really like about it is that he's a jazz musician, and he talked about how
jazz is all about timing.
Jazz is all about timing, right? And how it's sort of like mixes the magic of music with the magic of science, and in very interesting ways.
That's very cool. So, Brian, your work actually centers on timing. I know you're early in your PhD, but maybe you can tell us a little about what you're working on and how that relates to timing.
So, I'm interested in kind of. I work in the auditory system in Christoph Schreiner's lab at UCSF, and I'm interested in the auditory system and how your brain can kind of represent the world around it in sounds, because it's something that is kind of remarkable, because if you look around you, you see different signals from pretty much every point in space, but your ears are really only two sensors, one on each side of your head, and they're getting essentially what are two dots. They just tend to get brighter and darker if you were to move it over. But from that, we get all kinds of different information, and we build representations of what is currently coming in, and we need to remember what's kind of happened in the past to develop things like rhythm and to develop speech processing. And so one of the major focuses of research is helping people who have lost the ability to connect with other people through speaking and trying to help them come to terms with new things. And so another lab at UCSF... is Mike Mersnick's lab, who developed the cochlear implant. And so it's been kind of figuring out how we can help people make connections to others. And there's a quote that has been attributed to, I think, various sources, but I know it from Robert Fedopoulos, who I worked with as an undergrad, which is that sight is the sense we use to interact with objects, but hearing is the sense we use to interact with people. And so it's just kind of figuring out if we have this sense that allows us to interact so precisely with people, and through music is one way and through speech is another, how can we make that ideal, and how can we help people who lose it?
Awesome. And so are you working with just the basic mechanisms of how we hear? You're interested in how our experiences shape future perception? You're interested in sound localization? What areas are you kind of thinking about focusing on?
So at the moment, I'm kind of focusing on how we pay attention to something that's relevant. And so how is it that if you're in a room full of people, you can listen to one person's voice? You can carry on a conversation despite the fact there's all these other signals. And it's something that we can't design computers to do very well even. And so the fact that your brain can solve this problem and just focus on one thing in particular is kind of remarkable. But I mean, at the same time, you can have an appreciation for music, which combines all of these different structures and listening to everything at once. And so then it's the large scale structure that's most relevant. And so how you're able to kind of switch between the two and do both or any of that at all is what I find interesting. It's my work is focusing on.
Awesome. Yeah, no, this is the cocktail party problem. Mm-hmm. And it's... for people that don't know it, it's very interesting, and I guess people are still wondering whether it's top-down versus bottom-up, in the sense where is it just the auditory stimuli itself that is necessary and sufficient to signal out that particular one, or are there attention mechanisms? And so are you working in the attention realm, or are you working in the stimulus realm?
I'm actually working on trying to separate the two, and
excellent.
So I'm working on trying to solve that very question. And I think I've got a good system to do it, but only time will tell if my ideas actually work out.
Awesome. No, that's very exciting. And Sama, what are you working on right now?
All right. So right now I just joined recently Dr. Nirav Shah's lab. He studies sexually dimorphic behavior and in mice. So what makes males and females different in the brain? How are the programs laid down early in development that will make a male end up as a male and a female as a male? But and he studies this in mice, but he's also started a small fly sector studying courtship behavior in fruit flies. And this is was very interesting to me because I love genetics and I wanted to work on a system that would allow me to manipulate the genes of animals and see how their behavior is changed based on these manipulations.
So this is a pretty hot topic, and a lot of people have been studying this in worms and mice and flies. And so I think one of the general principles is a very select number of genes. You can just manipulate or knock out or change just one or two genes, and you can switch courtship behavior. Am I right? That males will now court males instead of females, or be more aggressive toward females instead of courting them, just by switching a couple of genes.
Right, that's absolutely right. And it's may even be more specific than that, in which you can change genes in a small subset of cells in the brain, not just the whole brain, and you can get these sort of strange behaviors.
And so the genes you're working on, are those genes that are known to be involved in olfactory signals, like pheromones from other flies, or are those genes that are just other aspects of behavior?
Right. So the gene I'm working on is the fruitless gene. It's a pretty famous gene in the Drosophila world. It's in males, it's a master regulator for male courtship behavior. And instead of just being about olfactory inputs, you can find this gene in almost all of the sensory organs of the fly. And throughout the brain and the ventral nerve cord, which is sort of like the spinal cord of the fly. So this gene is everywhere, and no one really knows exactly what it's doing everywhere or how it's doing it. But it seems if you change it, the male will no longer court females or become sort of bisexual or court males specifically. And it's a very cool gene because it's one of the few genes that have been implicated in changing behaviors. Which is not very, very studied, I think.
So this is fascinating because flies are such a great model system for manipulating genes. It's very easy to do that. Nobody really cares if a lot of flies die.
Yeah.
What about research in higher mammals? How much more complex does it get in terms of genes controlling sexual behavior?
Right, it's a lot tougher. One, because like you just said, it's not very easy to change the genetic profile of the animal. Although it's getting there, it's catching up, I think. And a lot of the studies prior have been sort of like hormone injections. Mm-hmm. You know, you inject the animal with testosterone, see what it does, or you can... But now, especially with Nirao Shah's, one of the reasons I really like Nirao Shah's work is that they can begin to manipulate single aspects of the estrogen or testosterone signaling pathways and change the animal's behavior in very subtle ways.
Very exciting. So speaking of kind of social behaviors, I know, Brian, you had saw something recently that kind of piqued your interest as well. Do you want to talk about that work, about social dominance?
Yeah, so there was a talk at UCSF by Russell Fennell, and he looks in fish, and he studies these populations of cichlids, I think, and they live in kind of a very strict kind of social dominance setting. Each male tries to carve out its own little home. And it tries to invite females over and court them so. But there's more males than there is space. And so when males assume the kind of dominant position in their social hierarchy, they immediately kind of switch into this state where they change their colors even, and they start expressing different genes, and like parts of their brain actually grow only when they're in this kind of dominant state. But there's also changes that happen then when they lose that position. And so these brain areas shrink over time once they're no longer the dominant animal. And so how that can kind of change and how much your belief of what your position in the world is, how that can shape your brain is something that I think is really interesting. Because it's also an example of some fish, once they've been removed from being the dominant one, will immediately kind of revert back and their brain will make changes very rapidly. But if the animal is knocked out but still tries to pretend to be a dominant male, he can actually keep the changes in his brain over time just because he's pretending. And he has no like actual nothing to back up his belief. But his brain will change in a way that is consistent with him still being dominant. And so he doesn't have these decreases over time.
So if you believe you're number one, you are number one.
Right.
That's all that matters.
That's the way of the world. If you believe it, it is true. No, that's really fascinating things. Yeah, no, fish can rapidly adapt to their environments. And I think that from what I loosely understand, humans can do so fairly rapidly as well. We just can't, you know, study them from the genetic basis, but I think the fish work is really cool that, you know, you can rapidly change their social dominance, and then it's very clear what the effects are. It's very cool.
It provides a lot of evidence that the best way to change who you are is just to be what you're trying to do. You don't have to have the confidence until later.
It's like snowboarding. Just look at the thing you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
If you look somewhere, if you look at a tree, you're going to jam into a tree.
Right. Exactly.
Thanks so much, guys, for coming on. And once again, that's www.carrytheoneradio.com. And you can check out some interviews, some really interesting neuroscientists, and hopefully soon non-neuroscientists, just people doing some really interesting things. Please come back anytime, guys.
Absolutely.
It was really great. And
thank you for having us.
Good luck with your thesis work. That was Brian Reynolds and Sama Ahmed from UCSF and Carry the One Radio. This is Techno for Science with DJ Rooch. I got some time left. Let's get back to the music. Science this week. This is Matthew Deere with You Put a Smell on Me. Chase Kitchen is coming up next. Stay tuned.
DJ Rooch of Technic for Science, and we're here to give you the Pirate Cat Radio weekly calendar for the week of October 25th, 2010.
Here's what's happening on the air and in the cafe on Pirate Cat Radio on the corner of Florida and 21st Street in San Francisco.
On Sunday, October 31st, from 1 to 3 p.m. on the Balkan Vulcan Show, Heike Kiskala. And from 6 to 8 p.m. on Shay's Kitchen, B-Stars.
And that's the calendar for interviews and performances at Pirate Cat Radio for the week of October 25th, 2010. Feel free to come on over to the cafe and hug a Pirate Cat DJ. We're located at 2781 Florida Street in the Mission District of San Francisco. And don't forget to listen to Spaces in Between on Thursday nights from 10 to midnight.
And also don't forget to listen to Techno for Science on Sundays from 5 to 6 p.m. Thanks for listening to Pirate Cat Radio.
Welcome back to another edition of New Music at Pirate Cat Radio. I'm your music director, Catherine. The first track I have for you is by Demon's Claws. This track is called Any Lou, and it's off their new album, The Defrosting Of. Next, I have a track by local artist X-Rays. This track is called Tattoo Shoes, and it's off the new upcoming album, Ammunition Teeth. The last track I have for you today is by Elephant Man. It's a remix of his track Vampires and Informers, and I'm playing this one in honor of Halloween coming up. This is the Double Standard Roots remix. Be sure to tune in every week for more new music at Pirate Cat Radio.
Vampire, well, them, give them the peg. All informer, them deserve it dead. No obvious man can mess with me head. Me run fi put a fire pan. Me come fi peg vampire. Take it get to people blood like a mosquito. Hold on the machine and in the fire. Zoom, me burn out the liquor with a youth and a mother. Me not have the party. Oh, like the man go take the youth them fi fool ya. Yeah.